Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is your moment. Your time to shine. Your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello!
Hi, Shireen!
Hi!
This is another episode of Ethnically Ambiguous on the Ethnically Ambiguous Network. Just kidding, it's iHeart. Could you imagine?
You said it so seriously, though.
I was using that confidence we speak about later on.
Yeah, we're here with Gerard Milligan!
Yes, of Astronomy Club.
Strong
of Black Man Can't Jump podcast. Just a lot of funny.
Yeah, we talk, but talk soon, a lot about
soon
serious
to pivot
things.
To become a serious actor.
Yeah. it's a really great episode. I hope you guys enjoy it. Don't go away.
Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Shireeny.
Anini.
Hell yeah, you did
it. I've never called you that before. Never again. This is Ethnically Ambiguous.
Anini time.
Anini time. We have a guest listening to all
we
of this
do
bullshit.
Have a guest. That was truly nonsense for you to listen to. But hey, you know what?
I'm mortified.
You have to experience the show in its full effect.
And that velvety voice that you hear is Gerard Mulligan.
Oh my goodness, thank you. You called it velvety.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
That's so much, not
you
as
have
pressure.
A, you have a voice for podcasting.
Yes, please keep
not
it
as pressure, yeah.
You have a voice for podcasting.
And the face for it. That's what my mom, you know,
You have a podcast.
Yeah, I do have a podcast, which I'm terrible at plugging. Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood.
Yeah. Woo.
We've been going on for a while. I feel like if you had a child, your child was born, your child now can talk and walk, and it's probably in first grade for as long as we had this damn podcast.
That is wild. I feel like it's been around that long?
We just sent our podcast to boarding school. We're like, okay,
oh, that's
bye.
A good point, yeah. Like, you're old enough to walk.
I'm busy.
Yeah.
the thing is, the podcast now, which is good, we review movies with leading Black actors. Mm-hmm. We have commented on people's movies, and now we are... either officially working for those people and trying to hide those episodes, or we are avoiding, like, do we avoid their work now? Because I don't want to make them mad and like fire me. So I think that's the weird thing that's happened now. Yeah. But it's cool.
I mean, as long as you don't say anything too derogatory, I think it's fine.
Oh, I come for people. Oh, I do. I'm not even going to lie. If something's bad, like, I will rip that
thing apart.
I saw
you on couples therapy. I was like, these guys, they go hard.
Yeah, I will rip it apart. And I don't mean to, but you know what? Sometimes when, like, someone... just will ask you the right question and you can just go.
Yeah.
I'm in it.
Well, it's also like you don't want to censor yourself ever. You want your opinions to have weight. You don't want to just be like some yes man, just be like, I love everything. I have no real opinions. You know?
That's how I am. I love everything. I have no thoughts on any film. I'm just like, oh.
This is fun.
That's how I end up. Oh. Yes.
all just realizations.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they made that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I'm so neutral. Yeah, I'm just right. Nothing.
It's just like, it exists. Good for you. I'm proud of you for doing that thing.
Which, it is hard. It's hard to get
and
a movie
made. It is hard to do anything. Yeah.
It's hard to get a movie made, so that's true. Yeah.
So, okay.
That's why we need the trades to prove it.
Right?
Was that conversation on air?
No.
It was technically recorded, but I don't think we had started
yet. Oh, you're right. All right. We talked about how the trades make everything real.
You listen, you know, when you're a performer, that Deadline article proves to your parents and your family that you are not a joke.
No.
You are for real. And someone likes your work.
Just may have health insurance.
And I made a joke about how I'm going to Photoshop just the Deadline header on anything I want and post it on my Instagram, because that's all I really need to be to look legit.
No one fact checks anything.
No one's gonna Google Deadline to see if this is actually legit. No, if it's on the gram, it's real. That's
like I posted a photo of myself sitting in front of an American flag.
Uh-huh.
And finally, I'm a citizen, and everyone's like, oh my god, congratulations.
Yeah.
And I was like, bitch, I was born here.
Like I've known you when I was 10.
Yeah.
When the hell? I mean, you can say anything. Like, someone just told me today.
So funny.
Someone told me today, like, everyone's being so scared about the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
So, with a straight face, someone goes, hey, you'll be fine. I'm like, why? Black people can't get the coronavirus. I was like, why? And they're like, our skin is real tough. And I was like, our skin is tough, dude.
I mean, I'm glad a black person said this to you, though.
Oh, it was, but it wasn't a black person I knew.
Oh, never mind.
It wasn't a black person. Like, basically, people were talking about it, and this dude randomly, hey, man, you good? I'm like, bro, I'm happy that you feel safe to say this to me, but, like, you have no facts.
Right. Yeah.
Because I'm going to fuck around and go on trips.
Yeah.
Like, I'm already looking at flights are so cheap.
They're so cheap.
I'm like, listen, man, I'm about to.
Everything's getting canceled.
Catch me in the Bahamas.
Yeah. Oh, I got a ticket to Puerto Rico already. I'm about to get a ticket to. They're like from LA, $275 round trip.
That's bonkers.
Come on.
Yeah,
I have a trip to New York this weekend that I am freaked out about.
What? I'm going to New York in a week. I'm scared too.
It's just, you know, the build up. You're like,
right.
Because the thing is, New York isn't built for it.
No.
Like, it's not even just the cities. It's the airports that make me a little nervous. Like, I really want to go. I want to go to Paris next month because I have a film and a festival, but I'm just like, going international, first of all, is scary, but I think the airports and the airplanes are the hubs of the bacteria,
have good enough filters that it's not going to, if you're sitting in an airport, like an airplane, the filter system is so good, all that shit gets pulled out.
Really?
So you don't have to worry.
Anyway. It looks cool.
But you got to, you just have, surfaces are the worst.
You just gotta wipe your surfaces down
because it transfers from touch. So if I like touch that, someone rubbed their coronavirus ass armpit on it or whatever.
And they only clean the airplane once every evening. Yeah. My sister told me that.
Have you all noticed when someone coughs in public how crazy it gets?
Yeah, it's like
you can't clean. Like, I have wanted to clear my throat at work multiple times, but I'm just terrified. Like, I can't imagine someone clearing their throat on a plane.
No, I can't imagine that.
Like, imagine having just a little tickle, and you just. People are coming for you, and if that person sits next to me, I need you to move.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No.
You put in the particles.
It's not some zombie outbreak. If you, I'm willing to say that everyone in this room.
We're trapped in this room too.
Everyone in this room, I believe that even if we did get it, we would fight it off on our own. The people that are really should be concerned are the people with like compromised immune systems that have autoimmune diseases, and then the elderly. Everyone else should be able to fight it off on their own.
Sure, but do you want to go through the hassle of having to go through the flu again?
I had the flu in January.
Oh, shit.
I don't got the time for, do you know how much work I have to do? Like, I have 44 things I have to do after this. I got no time for coronavirus.
You can ask them to bring you your laptop in quarantine. It's fine.
That's a real thing, though, because I'll be like, yeah, that's great, but time is it? Okay, I have to go.
Two weeks of quarantine.
I know.
Could you imagine? I mean, you got to cook for yourself. I hate cooking.
I know. They're like, stock up on all the rice. It's like, I don't really like eating rice.
So that means I can't order out now?
No.
I can't get Five Guys delivered to my house? Mm-hmm. Some bull.
You're going to get the delivery guys.
I still think we should remain calm.
I'm with you.
And just wash your hands as you normally should do anyway. Like,
it's crazy.
Like,
people are like, wash your hands. Like, were you not doing that?
You're supposed to be washing your hands regularly this whole time.
Dude, my mom has been threatening me to wash my hands for years.
As a man, I will say I've been in multiple bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen dudes go to the bathroom. Oh, you know what? Or just walk from the toilet urinal area. So I don't know what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And walk right out the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, you out here, you shook somebody's hand.
Yeah.
You touching stuff. Yeah. And I don't know what you did.
It's little poopy particles everywhere.
And yes, the poopy particles.
Yeah, you don't trust that shit.
The poopy particles.
Yeah. I did see a tweet from a dude that said he's never seen so many dudes washing their hands in a public restroom before until.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, 100%. Oh, excuse me, bro. Oh, sorry, bro.
100%.
Sorry, bro. 100%.
Yeah. Like, wash. Man, yeah. Fellas, be nasty as
okay,
hell,
let's reroute. Don't apologize. This is what's happening in the times.
I mean, it's current.
It's current, but
number one current podcast.
Yes, heard on Deadline. Yeah. But we did start talking about your podcast. Let's just start there. Tell us about your co-host.
Two co-hosts.
I have two co-hosts: Jonathan Braylock and James III. Actively dislike both of them.
Okay, copy that.
It's like, no, I speak to them. We all were a part of Astronomy Club. Mm-hmm. James, John, and I began the podcast because James posted something on Facebook when everyone still was kind of on Facebook. He posted something about the movie Blue Streak starring Martin Lawrence and how come Martin Lawrence didn't become famous. Then John and myself started trolling him. And John had a friend who was starting a podcast network in New York. And we just did a couple episodes. It's funny because at the time, me and James lived together. Mm-hmm. And where the podcast was in Brooklyn. We lived in Queens. Mm. And we were like, I can't keep traveling out here. So the day that the podcast officially got picked up by the network was the day that we were planned on quitting.
Oh, really? Wow.
We never told anybody. We were like, man, I can't keep doing this. It's annoying. It's Sundays. It's my day off. And like on the way there, we're going to do the episode. I'm like, all right, man, we should probably take a little break. But at the end of that recording, they told us, oh, Jake and Amir from College Humor have their own network. They want you guys to be a part of it. And we were like, oh, okay.
That's sick.
Yeah. And that kind of helped us with everything. We ended up doing like a Comedy Central. We did a couple Comedy Central videos. We did one for Black History Month for Snapchat called Thank You Black People, where we took black inventors that you probably don't know about in real life and just tell you what they invented and why you should be thankful they existed. Like the light bulb, like the carbon filament in a light bulb would not have existed without a black person. So there would be no light.
Everyone always thinks Edison, but you know what?
Edison could not get it done without the black guy who put the damn.
True.
He doesn't get credit. Also, you know, the layout of Washington, D.C., stuff like that. And then that helped us get Astronomy Club, a web series at Comedy Central. And that Comedy Central web series is what we ended up using to get the Netflix show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it all kind of like worked. Honestly, the podcast really helped with all that stuff, which is kind of crazy. And I talk to them every day. They both have wives, so I feel like I'm a part of both of their marriages, which is great.
Yeah. As you should.
Are they still in New York?
No, everyone's officially here now. For the first time, like James moved out. Me and John wanted to move out maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
James didn't want to do it. Then James ended up being the first one out. And me and John just got here. Like, John still goes back and forth or has his place in New York. But I officially just got here.
Well, so welcome. We're here. Welcome.
Thank you. We're here enjoying this L.A. sunshine, even though it's kind of rainy, which scares me. But, yeah.
We need the rain, though. We need the rain. That's why I always hear and believe.
It's true. It's funny because in New York right now, I think it's really sunny and warm. Whereas here in L.A., it's raining for the next week.
Yeah,
that's how it goes.
It can't be nice.
I hope
both
it's
places.
Nice and rain. I hope it's sunny this weekend when I have to go.
Oh. Well, I'm supposed to go skydiving this weekend, so I would love for it.
Where are you gonna go?
I'm supposed to go to somewhere an hour and 50 minutes outside of the city because you have to be 90 miles away from the airport. Because my birthday is next Thursday,
really?
So I'm becoming an older.
Thank you. What day is it?
The 18th, the day after St. Patty's Day.
What?
So I usually go really hard on St. Patty's Day. Thank you.
Wow.
I go really, really hard.
Nice. Well. You know. That's exciting.
Your sign is a leprechaun.
I know. And also my last name is Milligan. So it's like so much randomness
that
happens
great.
There.
Let's go back.
Yeah.
Where were you born?
Washington, D.C.
Whoa.
Southeast, D.C.
Wow.
Okay. I got to say Southeast so they know I'm for real.
Yeah,
You would say South, but Southeast, so people know. Yeah.
Like, so you're the real, so you're like actually from there.
Yeah, yeah. People are always like, I'm from D.C. Where are you from? Oh, I'm from Virginia. Like, no, that's not D.C.
No. You're
it's like being like from Jersey and claiming New York.
It's close.
Yeah, it's close, but that's not what you
So moving from. To New York wasn't like a huge stretch. You were like an East Coast
kid?
Well,
I went to college. Then I came to L.A. for like a year and a half, but I had never been. I was just like, I want to act. I did the college thing, so my roommate from college had family out here. But I didn't know. I had never visited L.A.
Yeah.
And so he's like, oh, we can find a place near my family, which was in Reseda, which is far as heck from everything.
Yeah, that's what happens.
So I ended up running out of money. And I didn't want to go back to D.C. because I was like, they're not going to know I'm broke. So I went to New York because I got like a little small part-time job. And then just stayed there and kind of everything worked out a little bit from there. It was like kind of crazy.
Where'd you end up in college?
I went to school in Baltimore. I think it's called, they just changed their name because they have more money. I think it's called Stevenson University now. But when I went, it was Villa Julie College.
And you mentioned you wanted to do acting?
Yeah, I always wanted to act. But I think like for me, being from D.C., if you live in D.C., you work for the government. Mm-hmm. That's what everyone does. Mm-hmm. You don't deviate from that. I think my parents didn't get a chance to go to college. So I think going to college was a big deal, even though I didn't want to go.
Yeah.
And my mom wanted me to be a lawyer. So like in high school, I did all these like law programs. Mm-hmm. I worked for the Veterans Court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the judge actually gave me my diploma.
Wow. Did you convince yourself that you also wanted to be a lawyer? Or was it more just like...
No, I always knew... From a young age, I always knew that I wanted something to do with movies. I just didn't know what anything was because I never knew anybody in it. I remember watching this movie called License to Drive. It was a movie with Corey and Corey, like Corby Feldman and Corey.
And
it is not a good movie. It's not a good movie. But you know when you're young, you don't really know what's bad. You just know, I don't like this. Yeah. I remember watching this movie and the whole thing was one of the Coreys was turning 16. He had a crush and he finally asked a girl out on a date. And I think she was like much prettier than him and like only dated guys with cars. So he had to get his license to be able to take her out. So the whole thing was him just trying to get the license.
That's such a simple plot.
It was a simple plot. He just needed to get the license. And I remember watching that movie and thinking two things. He had, now as an adult, he had condoms which are color-coded. And I was like, why does lollipops don't have sticks on them? They were all like, he kept trying to get like the damn lollipops. Like, why is he lollipop with no sticks on?
He loves lollipops.
Like, what's with these lollipops?
Sugar addict.
Yeah, and his friend kept trying to, hey man, make sure you got these damn lollipops. And then I remember thinking... Again, I didn't know what was a good movie or bad acting, but I just knew, I was like, I can do what this guy is doing. Yeah. I remember actively saying it out, like, I can do that. And then always wanting to, but I think I kept it to myself until junior year in college. Like, I didn't tell my parents what my major was. I think I told them it was like, I think I told them it was law. And I told them my junior year when I couldn't go back and change any of my,
it was like, too late now.
Like, I'm in it. I'm in the film theater department. And I think they're still terrified until I like, even with the Netflix show, they're like, do you have another show? I was like, well, not yet, but you know, we're going to get a bunch of shows. That's the whole point of having one show.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're terrified. Like, they're from I feel like if you come from one of those areas with like hardworking parents and like, all they know is the struggle they've done to get you to this place. Yeah. And they're like, we don't want you to struggle. I'm like, of course I don't want to struggle either, but this is what you got to do.
For them, like a stable job is their way of being like, you're going to be taken care of. Forever. Like, I don't want to worry about you or whatever. But are you an only child?
I am an only child.
That does not help your case.
No, it is. Let me tell you what's not helping my case, not having kids. Like that, my mom, because my parents are older. My mom had me when my mom was 41.
Whoa. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she was older. And then my stepfather is like, my parents are both in like mid to late 70s right now.
Okay.
So all I hear about is kids, like nonstop kids. And I was dating someone, my mom finally had hope, but then we broke up and she goes, so you don't have to date the person. We can help you take care of a child. And I was like, so you're just saying just have a baby? Like, is this what I've done to you? I made you so desperate that you're just like, just have a baby and we got it?
Yeah.
So that's where they're at right now. They're freaking out. My mom sent me a text today talking about, something she read about, I do comedy. She goes, apparently, if you hang out after a comedy show, people will like talk and converse, and you can like meet somebody at that place. I was like, Mom.
She wants you to date a groupie.
I know. I was like, Mom, you want like groupie Molly? This is kind of baby.
Sometimes the ladies come up and say, "Hey, man, you looking for a baby?"
I know, right? I was like, "This is the pitch that we're doing right now." I will say this though.
Oh, your mom sounds sweet.
Oh, she's out super here
getting you tips. Yeah.
She's super nice. I will say this though, there's gonna be a lot of Corona babies out here.
Oh, really?
Because I feel like if people have to stay home.
Oh, that's a good point.
Oh.
There's going to be babies nonstop.
The great boom.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
It's like you're home. There's going to be a lot of babies.
Like, if you're just bored, it's like, hey, man. You know?
Yeah. Are you doing anything? No. Just at home.
Yeah. It's like, we're all quarantined.
Shall we have a baby? That's what your mom is like. Yeah, you should consider quarantining.
Quarantine. Find you a nice lady. Just stay there for 2 weeks.
I found a girl in LA. She needs a place to stay.
You know? Get you a baby. It's funny because I just moved here. My ex just moved here too. So it's like all craziness. Like,
your mom's behind this.
My mom is a super swindle setup of all time.
Well, what do your parents think of your comedy now? I mean, I guess like, oh no, let's rewind. So when they found out you were going to do acting and film, what did you do after college, and like, how did you make them be okay with it?
Yeah,
my parents are very relaxed,
mm-hmm.
so they would never be like, "Don't do this." I think they're always worried.
Right.
I think I could win an Oscar, and they still would be worried.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure they're cool with it yet. Mm-hmm. I think we have had some success with the podcast and like,
yeah.
you know, with Netflix, of course. But I don't think that's enough, because Netflix for them, because they're older, is like something they don't get.
Yeah,
yet.
It's not
like,
real TV.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's not. It's not ABC. I've done like Blue Bloods and shows they watch, mm-hmm. which they get more excited about than the Netflix show. I was like, this. I directed it. We wrote it. We're in it.
Yeah.
And like for some reason, Chicago PD means so much more than a Netflix show to them.
Well, I guess that's more like it's actual on TV. So it's like, yeah, the friends there can it see is. It. But then they're like, streaming.
Like, what is this? They got to find the link.
Yeah.
They
got to like,
you know, they're like, what is this thing? My parents, when I got them, I put them on my Netflix account. I kept getting emails from Netflix saying, password updated, password updated, password updated. I'm like, Mom, what are you doing? She kept forgetting it.
And resetting
it. And then just like calling Netflix to figure out what the password was. I didn't even know you could call Netflix.
Parents do. Moms, they'll find anything.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah,
I spoke to the head of Netflix. I pitched them you.
Yeah.
They said, oh, my mom would do the thing of like, have you ever tried just asking Oprah for a job? I'm like, yeah.
Come on.
Like, yeah, I think Will Smith. I saw Will Smith. Yeah. He had an interview. He's doing a new movie. I'm like, yeah.
Reach out to him. Yeah, just reach out to Will Smith.
Just that'd be great. Yeah. Like, yeah, let's me just reach out to him, DM him and see what he says. Honestly, he might respond. Honestly, loves his Instagram.
Yeah.
Parents are endearing that way. They think anything is possible, but also nothing is possible at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. Especially if they're like an older parent. I feel like if they're a parent who wanted to be in the business and they're jaded, like, then that's a little scary. I haven't had that, but I've been at auditions when kids are there and their parents are there. And I question sometimes, is this audition for the kid or for the parent?
Yeah, I get really weary of child act. Like not all child actors, but I think there has to be a parental influence at some level, you know?
If it's super young.
Yeah.
I mean, again, but I will say I knew pretty young. Like seven, I knew I wanted to do movies. I just didn't know what it was. Like, I didn't even know how you go about it. Like,
yeah.
When I got to college, I still didn't know. And I went to a college where I was the only black dude in my department.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came down to do the plays, I mean, our dean of students from my school was very nice to me, but when it came to do plays, sometimes I couldn't even audition for him. Like, if it was like Marvin's Room, is that what it is? Marvin's Room Trojan Women. Like, a lot of these plays, I just couldn't even, because they just weren't black people in those plays.
Yeah.
And I remember her telling me once she wanted to do A Raisin in the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, you can do that. But then she said the reason she couldn't do it is because, one, there weren't enough people of color to put in it. And two, it would not isolate. What's that word? Like, it basically would like make it so that nobody else in the department who weren't black could audition for it.
Uh-huh.
And I remember saying, I can't audition for some of this stuff y'all doing
but
now.
Like, why can't you play a character who's just white if you're just acting?
Yeah, why can't you play fucking Hamlet or some shit?
Like, I don't know.
Yeah. That's crazy.
But I will say, we've had this conversation before on the podcast, but like, I've known I wanted to be like some type of entertainer or filmmaker for a long time. I genuinely, like, until I was like an adult woman, didn't know I could even do that though. Like, mm-hmm. I never saw an Arab woman on screen behind or from the camera. I went to college. I started like working like behind the scenes of like the theater production sometimes. And even that was like, am I allowed to do this? So I'm not saying this is what the case is, but I think sometimes if we don't see ourselves, like, especially like in real life, like in a school or in on the stage that you're like directly in front of, I think it's really just an indication
but also, like,
of like
weird like prejudice roadblocks don't help either. I mean, like,
because like if they're not going to have an opportunity for black students, then why just have all the other opportunities for only white students?
Why don't you just say theater, whites only?
Yeah. Well, it's tough because we live, like, for me, I'm older, so when I came out of school and when I was in school, Michael B. Jordan wasn't popping yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Daniel Kaluuya wasn't here yet. Like, there was nobody to, like, I came out of college.
Like Will Smith.
Like, it was Will Smith. It was
and
Adele.
Eddie Murphy.
It was Adele.
Eddie Murphy, maybe.
Yeah.
And it was like these guys, you know, some came from theater, but there were no young black people. Donald Glover wasn't popping
yet. Right, right.
And so anytime you would take one of these agent meetings, at least when I first started, they would always ask you, so who do you see yourself as? Like, whose career do you like? And I'm like not a tall black dude. I'm not light skinned. So I was like, oh man, I like Shia LaBeouf. Like Shia LaBeouf is the career. Like he's kind of geeky, but can be a hero.
Yeah.
And I remember one meeting, the guy goes, you should probably think about someone who looks like you.
Damn.
And I remember going, well, yeah, of course. Of course. And I think Nick Cannon had stopped making movies at that point. At least like regularly. Like I can't say Denzel because Denzel is 40. Will Smith is 40. It's like, Shia, to me at that time, like Shia and Robert Pattinson, they were the dudes that were close to my age, indies and stuff like that. And even now it's kind of tricky. I'll be honest, after the Netflix show has been very great, but I think when you have that type of show, I think a lot of people, women and people of color in particular, I think are more so expected to create your own content and like do your own thing. And that way someone can buy your brand.
Yeah.
Unless you started
when
you're a kid.
Just put you in a box.
Yeah. Because like for instance, I think, you know.
You have to like prove your worth in a bigger way.
Yeah.
Like, to be like, look, see, I can be successful. So you can consider casting me in a small role in a big project.
But then they put you in a box based off of what you've already established. So they're not looking like at your range. They're looking like, oh, you're a comic with a sketch show? Great. We're going to do this and this and this. You know what I mean? Yeah. And they're relying on you to make yourself sellable, which is such a fucking joke.
But it doesn't happen to everybody. I think one of my friends who I'm close with, and I tell him this story all the time. Like, he used to be a PA and work under me, but he ended up getting offered a directing gig before me, even though I had already did it. And when it was time for me to get this directing job, I had to shadow 6 episodes of a thing, whereas he did not. And I was like, this is interesting. And then someone broke it down to me like, oh man, if you're a woman or a person of color, you have to prove you can do a thing. If you're a white guy, you're expected that you can achieve it. I think about all the time, anytime you see these indie directors who, their movies do well, but they get some critical acclaim, they get a big budget movie. You know, but then when you look at these black directors or female directors who have the same type of indie movie, who will make more money, they still have to like have these stepping stones to do it. And it's just interesting because I think people are scared we're going to mess up. And also we live in a world where even as a person of color, I think to get our projects on, a lot of times we will even write subconsciously certain stereotypes. I think people expect a certain type of black person, for instance. Like, if it's going to be a woman on the comedy, if she's not the love interest, she's probably going to be bigger. She's probably going to be loud. She's probably going to be sassy. Just what it is. And she's probably going to have a subservient job. Like, she won't be your boss. She'll probably be your assistant or, like, the funny person who shares a cubicle with you who's like, hey, girl, whatever. If it's a black guy, if he is the love interest, he's probably going to be tall. Probably gonna be British, probably gonna be light skinned. that's British, just what it is. And if he's gonna be like a character-y dude, we really don't have those besides Don Cheadle. We really don't have. If he's gonna be a funny dude, he's probably gonna be small and like Kevin Hart. That's kind of the range we live in right now. And that, you know, black women, technically, right now, we're kind of like stuck in the paper bag test era again. Where most of our famous black women are very fair skinned. But, you know, there's still hope in Hollywood. I do think, like, the more people infiltrate, like Issa Rae being darker skinned, doing everything on her own.
I love Issa Rae.
And being like Viola Davis is
Viola
now.
Davis.
She's skinned.
Also, Viola Davis, it took her, like, so she was damn near, like, 45, 50 to
she's
get
she's been out here, too.
Like, been working. Her,
and now
Octavia
like,
Spencer,
oh
yeah.
like, working.
I know. Octavia Spencer has such a fascinating career to me because I have known her for so long. And now it's finally like people being like, wow, like, she's doing great. Nominate her for something. It's like, but she's been here.
Yo, there are people I've found out their ages who are black performers. And I'm like, oh man, they just blew up. And they're like, oh no, that person's 40. I was like, oh snap, I had no idea. I found out Chadwick Boseman's age the other day and I was like, what the hell?
How old is he?
Like, he's almost 42. I thought he was like early
30s. Wait. Chadwick?
Yeah, but you think about it, like, Michael B. is in his early 30s, but Michael B.'s been acting since
he's
12.
Been a kid.
Well, he was on, The Wire. Like, Wallace.
He's had success for a minute, though.
But it's so funny because outside
of he went away for a while and
he
came back.
And it's funny because outside of black male in particular, who's not British and who didn't go to, like, Ivy League, you rarely find one who was just a black kid who wanted to be an actor who got a chance to act.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like you'll hear, like, you know, like a Chris Pratt, or you hear like a Chris Evans, or one of these guys, and like, oh man, you know, I auditioned for some stuff and got it.
Whereas I got discovered. I was living in a van, you know,
just it just happened. Whereas like you see some of these guys like Yaya from, isn't he Yaya? He was in Watchmen, Well, basically, he's basically in Aquaman. He was on Watchmen, and now he's in The Matrix. That dude has popped in into everything, but he came from like Harvard or Yale or something like that. Yeah. You know, so if he's an American dude, you got to be vetted some way.
And then be like,
and if not, you're going to be a British dude.
Juilliard. Like, I mean, same with Donald Glover. He went to an Ivy League. You know what I mean? So, and that NYU. Sorry, my bad. NYU.
But oh, still, they think they're Ivy League NYUers.
But still, like, he was.
He came in a sketch comedy route, too.
Yeah, he did. He wrote.
He was a writer. Yeah.
He wrote.
Yeah. This is a great conversation. We're going to take a quick commercial break though. We'll be right back with Gerard.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
And we're back.
We had such a good conversation, we forgot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man.
Take a break. Gotta make our money.
Okay, let's go to Astronomy Club.
Astronomy Club.
It is so funny. If you guys have not seen it, it's on Netflix, 6 episodes.
Yes, thank
you. So funny. You directed at least, how many?
I directed 2 of the sketches. I directed... One that James wrote called The Twerk Zone, where it's like a Twilight Zone parody. And it's instead of, I think the original is a troll on the wing of the plane. And this one, we have a twerker on the wing of the plane.
That sketch was absurd.
James was staying with me in New York because we wrote the show in New York and I missed it because I was working on Deezus and Meryl during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came back home that night and he goes, I pitched this idea. You weren't there. No one liked it. And I was like, what did I do?
He was
like,
relying on your humor.
Yeah, he's like, there's a twerker on the wing. And I was like, that's genius. And I think I think when I heard the pitch, he tweaked it a little bit. But when he came back and pitched it the next day, I was like, we got to do this. Yeah. Like it's a twerker on the, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
And what is funny about that sketch is that randomly, you know, James wrote it. And we were casting because we had to have a dancer stunt double. And casting sent us a bunch of people who dance for Beyonce, Rihanna.
Yeah.
A girl that I used to date in high school was on the list. And I was I got to cast her. Like, I've known, like, we went to Bishop McNamara High School together.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure enough, she did it. And I was like, that was so cool.
She was twerking.
That was the only part that was weird. I was like, hey, you got to twerk and like, you know, you're on this big set and we had this green screen set up.
Yeah.
And I was trying to be.
And then you guys got married.
It would be crazy. Like I tried to like clear the set. She's like, nah, man, it's whatever. And I was like, are you sure? She's like, we've danced stadiums. I'm like, all right, cool. Well,
oh, hell yeah.
You have to do a split at this point. I was like, it was just a weird thing for me to like tell someone how to twerk.
Right.
But I dug it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It was a weird day at work that day.
Wow. Well, that Okay, let's. That's actually hilarious. I have to go back and watch that now and be like,
You can see they had the same hairstyle. You can see when the body switch a little bit, but I think we pulled it off. That and another sketch that I actually wrote that stars John, James, and Keisha about these black people at a wedding and they don't know the black dancing? Dances. Yeah, because that happened to us a couple of times where it's like, come on, man, show me what you got. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that dance.
Yeah. I really liked the reparations one.
Oh, thank you. I wrote that one because that happened in real life too. I was at a club. Me and my boys went to a club and one of them had a table. I forgot how he got the table.
Yeah.
But the DJ was black. It was like, it was up and down in New York. So it was a club that celebrities go to. And if you're going to be in VIP and if you're going to be black in that club, you probably have done something. Like you're a celebrity, like you know somebody. I don't know if someone I did knew, but like we made it to VIP and the DJ kept shouting us out. Like just, he was so proud. Like he was just proud we were in VIP. And
he was black, I'm guessing.
He was black. Yeah, he was just hyped. He was just hyped black people were in VIP. Yeah. He was just so hyped the whole time, just shouting us out the whole time. And I'm like, oh man, well, I got to make this into a sketch.
That's hilarious. If you guys haven't seen that one or any of them, just watch it. But like, I like that one a lot because like, I learned some stuff.
All real facts.
They're all facts.
All real facts. I mean, listen, people didn't know about Tulsa until Watchmen came out and the whole show was about like the bombing of Black Wall Street. And like, people probably know that in 1981. The police blew up a block in Philadelphia. Like, that's an actual thing that went down. Yeah. Ooh, to get one guy, I think, apparently. Who knew?
Okay, let's go back. How did Astronomy Club come to be?
So, we all came from the Upright Citizens Brigade in New York. And at the time, there were no people of color on stage. We had one black guy on stage. His name was Phil Jackson. He ended up getting a job on Key & Peele and left. So, there was theoretically, one black spot open. And I remember everyone was hyped. Like, I didn't know a lot of people at UCB. I didn't have a lot of friends there yet. And I remember just running into people like Ray, who I didn't know, and everyone going, yo, you heard Phil's gone, right? Yo, somebody might get that spot.
That's
like,
wild.
It was crazy. And a white guy got it.
That's crazy.
And a white guy got it. And a white guy got it. And a white guy got it.
That's so disappointing.
It was crazy. Like, at one point, there was no black person on that. Because they have teams at UCB, so it's like, if you're a part of the house team, that means you're like one of the official performers of the theater. I think Natasha Rothwell got put on one of the teams that performed on Saturday, but it wasn't one of the Herald teams.
Yeah.
And I think at the time, UCB had allowed indie teams to audition together.
Yeah.
James, I guess, reached out to a bunch of people of color and was like, hey, I want to put together this team to audition together. And I remember I actually, at that point, I was quitting. I was an intern and I hated being an intern because I felt like I wanted to just meet people and some of the performers would come in the door and would never say hello. Mm-hmm. And I always made sure to work the door so I could say hi to people. And I was like, I'm done with this place. And I ended up running into Shantaine Bowen, who's one of our teammates, because I interned and I volunteered at another show at UCB. So I quit one and I was quitting the other one and I ran into him and he told me about this practice group that was meeting up and we had about 11 people, but for a team we needed 8. And then slowly but surely, like, people kind of faded out, people got sick, people just didn't want to do it. Then we ended up dwindling down to the 8. And we rehearsed for months.
Yeah.
None of us knew each other. At least I didn't know anybody. I kind of knew Ray. I had seen Shantaine a couple of times. Keisha Zoller was a part of this famous indie group with Nicole Byer and Shashir Zomeda. Caroline, I think I saw in passing. Braylock, I never met. So I think we made it a choice to hang out and have dinners together. Mm-hmm. So after every rehearsal, we had to hang out. We had to get to know people. Mm-hmm. We had to be a family even if we hated each other. Mm-hmm. And so when it was time to audition, we all got on. The team got on, which was kind of crazy because I definitely remember being at UCB the very next day after the teams were announced and hearing people who I was friends with, man, I heard they got an all-black team. And I think years prior, they had an all-women team that didn't do so well.
Okay.
I'm not sure what actually happened, but I know the team didn't do well. They ended up putting a couple guys on that team. And I think people kept saying, oh, it's going to be another Detroit. It's going to be another this. That was the name of the team. And
that's
never said
so
anything.
So annoying to hear.
Yeah,
and like, so disheartening from like your peers and colleagues. And like,
you know what it is, man? I hate to say it, man. Look, people don't like black people. Like, it's hard for me because I know people are like, oh, that's sad. But
it's not even sad. It's infuriating.
Yeah, but there's no world where I'm like, you know, I have other friends who are people of color and they go, yeah, my parents would be upset if I dated a black dude. And there are other people of color. Like, one of my good friends just said this to me a couple of days ago. And I'm like, it's just, you know, people like the culture, not the people. So it didn't bother me. It was just a thing of, I remember we just knew actively when we were performing, we always battled with how black we could be, because some of us, we are different. Like, you know, Keisha is Cosby black. Like, her parents, doctor and lawyer. Like, she grew up very wealthy, you know? Jonathan and Carolina from the suburbs. James, you know, grew up with a single mom, but, like, he is a very geeky kid from Ohio. Mo is from Canada. So her knowledge of race, she definitely knows it, but, like, the division and hatred, like, she's not really...
Yeah, it's different.
You know, it's different for her, where me, Shantane, and Ray are probably from, like, more of the urban areas, but Shantane went to Harvard, you know? Yeah. So then me and Ray are there kind of like the guys, like, trying to figure out what's happening. So we all kind of... Some of us say the N-word, some of us don't.
Yeah.
You know? So that was the thing.
But I think, like, the fact that you guys are all so different is just a testament to, like, the different kinds of black that everyone could be. You know what I mean? True. You're not just one type.
That's true, but I don't think the world sees it as that. Right. Like, even if I look at, we talk about movies, almost every actor who's nominated for a movie has played some subservient role, like, probably a slave, you know what I mean? Like, be truthfully honest, if you won, you probably played a slave. Like, Denzel won, Denzel played a cricket cop. Like, again, those parts are fun, but, like, you're never just the dad figuring stuff out, or the mom who's, like, you know, maybe an alcoholic but really cares about her kids.
That's a good point.
You know?
Yeah, it's like Lupita became famous off 12 Years a Slave. Yeah. Like, that blew her career up, and you're like, she was playing a slave.
Viola Jesus Davis Christ. Was nominated for an Oscar when she played a maid. Yeah. Octavia Spencer won for a maid that makes someone eat, made a woman eat a shit pot.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's we have not changed from those things as of yet.
Yeah.
And I think at Shonda Club, we kind of always dealt with that. Because again, improv is a very kind of, it's not a rich comedy, but it's different than stand-up. Because stand-ups is just you and a mic. Improv, you need people, you need rehearsals, you need a theater to perform it. And those things usually come from college-educated people, people who aren't poor.
Yeah.
You know? So our audience is... At first, were mainly white, but then they started to diversify and became kind of a mixing pot, which we liked. And then, you know, we stuck together because they broke the team up after the very first year.
Really?
Really?
Quickly. They broke the team up very, very quickly.
Like, just try to incorporate you in white teams?
Yep. So literally, they split the team up and put everybody on white teams.
Wow.
Yep. After the very first year.
Wow.
I think the only thing that kept the team together is that there was another team at UCB called Witch, and they did a Halloween theme show. And I had some friends on that team. And Black History Month was coming up. I was like, oh, since we're the black team, we got to do something Black History Month.
Yeah.
And I emailed the artistic director before telling the team. So we kind of already had a date, but I didn't tell anybody we needed to write anything yet. And I kind of like figured the team would be a hot mess. Because some of the people, because the theater really supported some of the team, but not a lot of, well, not all of us. Like me and John, I will actively say was not supported by UCB in any way. So, but some of the other people on the team, like
what does
they
it mean
really
to support them?
Like a lot of our other teammates, like got a chance to do some of the weekend shows. Like UCB always reach out for them for showcases and stuff.
They had their favorites.
Yeah. And like me and John were not that. And I think for us, I think honestly at the time I was mad, but I think for us, it kind of worked out better because of that, John and I were able to push a lot of things for us to do because we had time. Like we weren't doing the weekend shows like everybody else. So we were able to kind of focus on Black Man Can't Jump and then also make sure we got the sketch show, the stage version of the sketch show up and running.
Yeah.
And then that kind of propelled us into a situation where it was like, we got comics to watch from that. We got we got a lot of stuff from that sketch show. A show I only wanted to do once.
Yeah.
So I will admit that, like, if Monique didn't tell me we needed to do this for a year, I wouldn't have did it. Because I was like, man, this thing was hard. We had rehearsals.
Yeah.
It took us 3 or 4 times just to get the show on stage. They make you audition shows. And they wouldn't approve it. It took 3 or 4 times before they finally approved the show for a run. And then after that, we got comics to watch. And Black Man Can't Jump had a meeting with Comedy Central to pitch a show. But we figured we already had done sketch.
Yeah.
Astronomy Club on paper is 8 black people who are different and they're doing sketches. Like, it's not that really hard of a pitch.
Yeah.
So we moved Astronomy Club into the Black Man Can't Jump meeting. Astronomy Club got the sketch show, the digital sketch show. And then, you know, we kind of were off to the races from there.
Yeah.
And then when it came to Netflix, we already planned on pitching the show. I had met Dan Powell, who if you're in New York, reach out to him. He's super funny. He did Amy Schumer. Francesca Ramsey had a pilot. He did Michelle Wolf's show. He does Tim Robbins, I Think You Should Leave, and he did our show. I met him on Francesca's show, and I was like, oh man, we should work with this dude. So I convinced the team to work with him, and then we were coming to LA to pitch. One of our friends, ex-Mayo, had a random show. Had a random show on a Saturday in like Lamont Park here in LA. John and Caroline went to school with a woman who works for Kenya Barris. So John happened to be at the show, ran into this woman who he went to college with. And apparently we knew from Shashir that Kenya was looking for a sketch show. So when John ran into her, he already knew that, kind of pitched Astronomy Club to her. She's like, oh, bring Astronomy Club in. And then we reached out to Dan, be like, Dan, would you want to team up with Kenya? He was like, cool. We met. Kenya was like, I'm down. And then we had a meeting with Netflix already on the books. Nice. So instead of us just going, like, Kenya's team came as well. And Kenya had just signed a $100 million deal with Netflix. Holy, so it's kind of like, it all just randomly happened. But I do think, it's, you know, kismet. Yeah, and I also think, like, you know, again, John and I not being, like, having more free time, I think, at certain points than everyone else, allowed for us to, like, kind of, like, maneuver things.
Yeah.
So some of the team didn't have to worry about stuff, and we just did it. So it was kind of like,
there's a silver lining there.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, let's just get it done. So, like, and also it was easier, too, because, like, it's eight of us. So it's like, let us just handle it, and then we can just get it done, and we all can benefit from it.
Yeah.
So it helped us out.
Yeah, well.
Wow, that's a...
That's a crazy story, though.
I mean,
like,
it's...
Everything had to, like, you never know. Like, again, you mentioned that you were going to quit, and then something happened. That was the second time you were going to quit something, and something great happened.
Listen, I was about, I told my...
Just quit the industry.
I told my agent I was about to quit acting last Monday. I was like, bro, I'm done. I'm old. They ain't booking me on these pilots. I'm out of this thing.
Then you booked something.
Nope.
Nope. Okay, wait.
But you know what? The pilot season isn't over yet. So,
yeah.
But yeah, man. Also, that was like 5 years. So it took us a long time. Yeah. It's just like there were stepping stones each year that felt really good about
it. But also, it's interesting that the whole like UCB's this weird whites policy like helped propel you guys further because you didn't let it get you down. Like you didn't go like, oh, I guess we can't do it if the white, you were just like, fuck it. Like we'll just do it ourselves, which you always end up having to do.
I think like there are certain people, like I think of like Jordan Temple, who's a very funny comedian, had this show, Hidden Fences. Basically, he based a show off of one of those years, it was like Oscar So White. People on the red carpet kept confusing the movie Hidden Figures, which starred Taraji, with Fences. And so he did this show. I think he wanted to do it at UCB, but he had a tough time putting up at UCB. So he did it on his own at this place called The Creek in the Cave, and it blew up.
Yeah.
Like, my man has been writing on different shows ever since. Like, his tape specials is, like, just going places. Hilarious. And it's like, you know, sometimes I think we put a lot of faith. And this is the diss UCB, because I know they helped a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it's like, we put so much faith in some of these institutions that, sure, like,
You
know, sure, but at the end of the day, it's going to be you that sells it. What's going to happen is you're probably going to do something big, and then someone will take credit for it.
Yeah.
And then you got to fight to make sure, like, people aren't getting credit for your work.
Yeah, and usually the people that have those, like, crazy success stories from UCB are white. Like, like it's just, there's no question that the people that are, I don't know, that have the biggest foot in the door are the ones that look like you, that like are, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it's not even a diss to them. It's just one of those things where I just feel like I'm very melancholy about it, where it's like, yo, this is what life is. You know, like I feel like, you know, as a black dude, always knew you got to try harder to do this. I'm pretty sure as women, not only are you like going against like people of color, but it's also like you got to go against men in general. It's like you got to be better than like everybody. Whereas my biggest concern is just like, oh, man, I got to make sure people just don't, like, judge me based on my skin color.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's so many things.
Yeah.
And I think, you
there's definitely pros and cons. Actually, no, just cons. Just different degrees of cons.
I mean, it's the world. And I remember talking to one of my friends. I was like, my greatest fear when I was living in New York was anytime I got off the train and, like, walk into my house and there was a white girl walking in front of me. Because I feel like after a block or two, it's fine. But then if you're going for a while, it feels like someone's following you.
Yeah.
And so I would always cross the street or try to speed past.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that is my fear. And that's only if she's white. But I'm like, if her fear is no matter what color this guy could be a threat.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you just got to remember, like, everyone's dealing with a thing.
Yeah.
It's just being conscious of our place in the world. And I think people don't do that.
No.
People don't do that. Sorry for the TED Talk. It's just like people just don't do that thing.
No,
it's like,
don't,
it's just a simple thing. Like, how do you want somebody to treat you? That's it.
You have to be conscious.
Be nice to you?
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, I'm glad that, like, that's a good thing to bring up. Like, you might be nervous or like, I'm sure white dudes don't even think about that most of the time. Like, being nervous going into a store with a hood on or whatever. You know what I mean?
Oof.
But like,
Man, I've been stopped at frisked in New York twice.
Shit, man.
Yep,
Bloomberg,
twice.
Fucking
Bloomberg. Bloomberg. And they sent me one of those text messages. Are you going for Bloomberg? I responded, fuck no. Yeah. I responded somewhere different each time. They sent me three. And I was like, didn't you notice from the first two I wasn't doing this? Yeah. And the second one I felt very proud of. The second one was, hi, I've been a black person who's been stopped and frisked by Bloomberg. I will vote if he apologizes to me and tell me how he will pay his penance.
Did you get a response?
I got no response from that.
Yeah,
the fucking robot, that's why.
I got no response.
They probably get
this.
That all day, like,
no, yeah. Dude. No.
Okay, one more break?
Yeah, let's take another quick break.
One more break, we'll be right back.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
And we're
back.
Ooh, yeah.
I have a question. How did you get into comedy? Because you wanted to be an actor. Oh, like, how did all that come about?
I got into comedy because I am a big cinema fan. I research everything.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I realized once I got out of college, I didn't go to one of the fancy schools and I didn't start young. So I needed some way to get in because I was in acting classes, but like all of my classmates had agents. And I was like, how did y'all, all of them, all of them had agents. And I remember some of my classmates and even some of my friends had agents before they even found out about the class. So a lot of times the agent would be like, oh, you need to learn how to act. Go take this class. But he had the agent.
That's crazy.
And so I couldn't figure out, I remember I was trying, man. I was sending out headshots. I was doing things I guess you're not supposed to. I was emailing people, like searching for stuff.
Mm.
And I started Googling. Also, to be truthfully honest, I feel like people expect black folk to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured it would be easier to be a funny black person than be a dramatic black person.
Yeah.
So I started just Googling people. And I found, you know, Chris Rock, Bernie Mac were all stand-ups. Which I still like the idea of doing stand-up, but I was like, that's not what I like. I wanted something that was like a little bit more actory.
Yeah.
So I started looking at white people. I looked at Will Ferrell, Tina Fey, and Mike Myers.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that all of them had went to like these improv places.
Yeah.
And I had lived in LA at the time. And so I started at the Groundlings.
Okay.
But the Groundlings had an 18-month waiting list from like level one to level two. It was something crazy.
18 months?
It was something crazy. I was like, what the hell? And so at that point, I was thinking about taking class somewhere else, but then I realized I was moving back to New York and I found out that the Amy Poehler School was on both coasts. So if I went to New York, I could study there. And if I ever came back, I could just perform at UCB LA. And that's what I did. When I got to New York, UCB has a diversity program. Mm-hmm. And I signed up for it. I paid for my first class, could not afford to take a second class. So a year went by before I found out about the diversity program. Applied for that, got it, and then I became an intern to help pay for the rest of them. And it kind of worked out. I think it worked out.
Yeah.
It was just a thing of, I just didn't know what to do. Because I think unless, I don't know, man. I feel like it is very easy for some people to make it. I think some people just either have that essence, or sometimes you go into an audition and, you know, since I do write now, I write things and I don't have a person in mind. But when I see them in the room, like that's, that's, I don't know what it is, the essence, the the look, like that is what I had in mind. And I think that happens for a lot of people, but for some other people, for others, it's like you got to really...
like sell yourself.
You got to put the work in, man. Like, I'm not that guy that somebody just decides they want to help.
Right.
It's just like, I have friends who will show up to an event and someone's like, hey, what do you do?
Yeah.
That is not a thing that happens to me. It's like,
I'm always in awe of those people. In awe and enraged.
But it's also one of those things, it's funny because I have a lot of those friends who are probably... they're probably attractive, and they always go, yeah, man, things just happen. I'm just saying, I'm like,
yeah, you're probably beautiful.
It probably did happen, and I'm not hating on you, but damn it, let me figure this out. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm definitely that guy who like has to study and get tutored to get everything. But it's fun. I think the hardest part is like not quitting.
Yeah.
So I think even when we got the Netflix show, I wasn't the happiest at the time.
Why do you think that is? You're just hard on yourself?
Because I think you always... are looking for the next thing.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
I think once we got the Netflix show, again, I was going through like a breakup or like a relationship that was declining. But when it came to the show, I think it was a lot. I think John and I had did a lot of work to get the show. And I think at one point, I can't speak for him, but I think at one point I was a little mad because we were doing a little bit more work than people and everyone was getting the same credit. And then it was the thought of, you know, we have this show, but then, you know, you want another show or a movie, or you're worried, like, if this doesn't work out, what do I do now? Because you know, you don't want to go from having a TV show to going back to being a dog walker or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the team were coaches for comedy. Like, you know, they don't want to have to, we don't want them to have to go back to being an improv coach or going back to their day job. So I think that was also a worry. And I think that never ends. Like, I have friends on TV shows and they get worried that their story isn't the A story of the show and they don't get to act in the way they want to act on their show. They got money and they're on TV, but like they're not getting the fame and attention they want. So I think, you know.
Yeah, I keep going.
Yeah, and also I think like now that I'm officially getting older, I'm like, oh, I understand what people say now when you have to find your peace of mind outside of work. Mm-hmm. So I think like, you know, especially as creators, we always are creating. We're always like trying to figure it out for ourselves while just auditioning and doing a thing that, or getting a writing job that everyone else does. But I think comedians have a little bit of a harder road because people expect you to do so much.
Yeah.
Like if you're just a quote unquote actor, you're just waiting for auditions, man.
Yeah.
But if you're a comedian, when the next time are you on stage?
Right.
Have you wrote your pilot?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, there's so much you're supposed to do where like you don't get a chance to rest. And I think we can rest.
Yeah. 100%.
You know, like I think we can rest. And I think that's the thing I have learned the hard way, where it's like, bro, you can be on TV. I mean, literally the day of the premiere, I think was the day I stopped sleeping. I just started going to sleep last Thursday. So there was 3 months I did not sleep. Had to go to doctors and everything.
Damn.
And it's like, it just stresses
like
you the hell out.
And,
it just stresses you out. And then like, apparently that weakens your immune system. And with the goddamn virus on the way,
you
that apparently is not the thing you want.
No, you gotta be sleeping.
So I just started sleeping on Thursday.
Good. Good.
Thank you. It's been 4 days straight.
Wow. That's 4 days.
Get your little 4 days sleeping.
4 days straight. Hey, listen. One of my friends made fun of me. I'm like, this is a big deal. It has been, it is a big deal. 4 sweet nights to sleep.
Wow.
Sweet, sweet nights. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's a little happiness. Because I tell you, we got that Netflix show. Even being on set, I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
Because I was like, man, is it good?
Yeah.
Because we wrote it. So I was like, did we write something that people like? Or are they going to like it?
Well, it's really hard. Yeah, it's hard as a creator or creative of any kind to like not be critical of your work. You know,
I'm so hard.
I've never made like something that I like.
You feel like an imposter the whole time.
The whole time you feel like, did I deserve to get this thing?
Yeah.
And if I have meetings now and I'm working on something where it's like, do I... am I the person to do this?
Yeah.
You know, I know it's my idea, but is it, should I be doing this? Yeah. Like, should I pass, like, would it be better if I passed this off to somebody else? Because you never feel like you're worthy enough. Like, I have friends on, like, writing on shows, crazy shows, and they're like, I feel like an imposter every day I go to work.
Even
though they're succeeding and winning, or their shows are getting nominated for Golden Globes and Emmys, still feeling like they shouldn't be there.
Honestly, it's a little comforting to hear that, though.
I mean, it is. Like, everyone is always struggling, man. Mm-hmm. And it's, to me, it's like, when do you get to the point of just being okay with everything?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
Because we're looking at people who are successful, like, oh, what do you have to complain about?
And then they're but then they have fraud.
They have so many things to complain about, too. It's like, oh, man, I have this lifestyle now. What happens if I lose this job and I can't afford it?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I had a meeting with someone yesterday. They're a famous comedian, but, like, you could tell that, like, they didn't want to be, like, washed up. Like, you could tell that they were just, like, doing something, a project to do it, and not because they, like...
Yes.
Like, it was, like, such a paycheck of, like, I just want to stay relevant. It was, like, and it was, like, but you don't need to... Like, you were at a point where I don't think you would ever be, like, why? Like, you would just...
Yeah.
If so you disappeared into your, like,
you would still be a name.
Yeah, you're still a person. And it's, like, oh, and you're, like, older. So, like, that's fucked.
That's scary.
Yeah.
That is scary. Because
think about it. I mean, again, like, that means you're
like,
just...
Like, you hit it, and then all of a sudden you're scared that now all of a sudden you're...
Yeah,
you you're
washed up.
I mean, because with comedy,
did you meet with Eddie Murphy?
I know, I say good guy. I mean, I think he has a stand-up special coming out. So,
but he went away for a while. Oh, yeah, but then maybe he was like, "Am I done?" And then came back. Who knows? Who knows?
That's the, Hollywood loves a second chance.
Yeah,
I mean, think about Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah,
I remember what, at one point.
Now he can do Doolittle because of that, and you're like,
I know
his career trajectory is strange to me, but I will say there are multiple white men that have gotten a lot of like redeeming stories though. Like I don't think we see that a lot in like second chances are usually for white dudes.
Yeah, I mean because we don't have enough celebrities. People of color don't have enough celebrities to like have a second chance.
Yeah,
like there would never be an Oscar. There would never be an Oscar where a white person isn't nominated for best actor, supporting actor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but there can be some years where not people of color nominated.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen three in a row. So that's the world. It's just a funny world we live in where I have a lot of friends, white dude friends right now are like, man, acting's tough out here, man. It's like the only one diversity. It's like, no motherfucker, check it. Look, if you look at some of these pilots, the only time you will see a person of color in the lead, if it's important to the character that it is a person of color. If it's not, it's still a white dude.
Yeah.
Like, the best friend may be a person of color now, whereas before it was a white guy.
Yeah.
But, like, that lead is still a white dude.
I've had multiple white friends be like, I just, it's, like, you should just audition. Like, it's your time right now. I'm just like, I'm not an actor, first of all. But, like, they'll just, I don't know. It's just.
Because they're feeling a little bit of the struggle. It's like,
finally, for like, the first time ever.
But it's not that much of a struggle. Like, for instance, people at home, all right? You know, we were talking about a little bit the trades. Deadline is one of the most famous things that would tell you what's happening. Like, that's, as a performer, that's the thing you want. You want a deadline article saying, I got a movie made, I'm in a TV show or something.
I'm important.
Check Deadline, go to the TV section, and just peruse the people cast on TV shows. I'm pretty sure most of those leads, only because I just looked at it today, most of those leads will still be white dudes. Like, that has not changed. Again, one of the friends, maybe an Asian woman, maybe a black guy, but the lead will still be a white dude.
Yeah.
Not that much has changed,
it's
folks.
It's true.
We just have like more than two people. Like we have like Donald Glover. We have like Daniel Kaluuya. We have like Michael Bean now.
Finally, we have more than just like the one person.
Yeah. And now even Denzel's son. What is it?
David. I call him Baby Denzel. David something Washington.
He's two names.
That boy, when he laughs, He sounds just like Denzel.
It's crazy.
Oh my goodness. But his voice is so articulate.
Yeah.
Like he it's almost like he overpronounces words and it sounds perfect. It sounds like,
what is his name? That's going to
perfect.
Me
sorry, let me
I
get
think
into
it is,
it.
Isn't it David?
It's David something.
Yeah, it's
Washington.
David something Washington. He has a three-parter. He's too cool. He's too cool for just one name.
Well, he's the son of Denzel.
But it is interesting to see like so many white actors and actresses.
John David Washington.
Oh, John David. Okay, I forgot the John.
Yeah.
So many white actors and actresses are from these huge Hollywood families. Mm-hmm. It's really cool to see that happening in black families. Like the Smiths, the Washingtons. Who else is out there?
I think that's all we got right now. But we got two.
But I like that.
We got two.
You know?
Shoot. Let me get into my kid.
If Oprah had a kid,
it
would happen there. But you know what?
We got Blue Ivy. She's going to be rapping and singing soon. Look, if I get a kid, she's and when I make side. It my kid, if they want to do it, like, go for it, man. Like, use whatever clout I have and just do. I don't even care if they're not good. Mm-hmm. Like, because I think we need to be, we need to get to a point where we don't have to be exceptional. Mm-hmm. I think women and people of color, we always got to be exceptional. And I think, you know, the moment we can have a good movie, a decent one.
Without getting clearly written off.
Yes. Yeah. And without affecting so many people after us. Like, there was so much pressure on, what was it, 2018, mm-hmm. with Black Panther and Crazy Rich Asians coming out.
Yeah.
If either one of those films would have bombed, we wouldn't have been working for like 20 years.
Never again.
Like, I mean, those movies had to be events. Yeah. Like, you had to make those events. People had to dress up and go to Black Panther. People had to say, hey, we went to go see Black Panther. Make sure you see Crazy Rich Asians. Like, we had to do the support thing. And I'm cool doing that. I just wish we could have a movie that doesn't have to be the all one race movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, cause I don't live in a world with all one race.
And it's this, like, is like coming, you know, from like, like some, like, we're progressive, but like then you have like the president of the United States getting mad that like Parasite won Best Picture. And like, have you guys seen that video of him at a rally?
Listen, no. Listen, my man.
But like,
you know, he didn't watch it.
No, but
you know he didn't.
But
he can't read.
I'm bringing that up because he represents a huge part of America, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Like, that's what's a little bit unsettling, is that he said that in a huge crowd, being like, it's a Korean movie. It had no place here. And everyone cheered. That's what scares me.
Well, the thing about that part of the world is, that part of the world has always existed. It's just tough because I think our generation has a tougher job. I think our parents and our great-grandparents fought for things that were very tangible. They vote for the right to eat at the same restaurant. They fought for the right to sit on a bus. They vote for the right to vote. Those are things that we could, like, tangibly change.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you're fighting a change of mindset. Now you're fighting to change your own relatives' mindset. Yeah. And, like, how do you... And you're doing it probably with a lot of old relatives who, like, are passing things down. How do you do it with a grandma who's 70 and just is racist? You know what I mean? And, like, that's a hard realization. That's hard to realize, I think, for some people. Like, I have friends who it's hard for them to go home because they're like, all I do is fight. And you realize your grandmother, who you've known your whole life, who used to bake you cookies, is racist or homophobic.
Yeah.
You know, I not my parents, but my cousins and stuff are very religious. And I get into active arguments about trans and gay culture so often because, you know, and the hard part is people, I hate when people think they're so right.
Yeah.
And my cousins will go, oh, they're living with sin. And I'm like, who the fuck, who? All of us, right? Because I know I'm not perfect. I'm like, you got a kid right now. You know what I mean? Like, this person's got a kid. This person, like, we all doing shit. So what is the superiority complex? And I think that's the base level. So I think we live in a world where my parents right now, we used to live in D.C. They live in the deep south. And their neighbors, my parents aren't rich. Their neighbors aren't rich. But it's, like, white people across the street. But I think for some reason, instead of being... Instead of like the people in the caste system, like, leveling up and partnering up and realizing, oh, we are cool, the rich people are the problem, it's like the poor white people still feel better than the poor black people.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I'm not the bottom. I'm still better than you, and I'm based on, like, the skin color, which I can't fucking change.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, oh, we're the same. We go to the same Walmart.
Yeah.
We have the same struggles. We need to be upset at the people who are, like, taking our money.
Yeah.
And it's, like, that is the thing that is so hard. Because I'm, like, I don't know how you educate those people that, like, the gay guy in New York isn't affecting your job in Florida. You know what I mean? Like, the trans person in Texas has nothing to do with you, you know, in Alabama. And it's hard because when you watch Fox News, which I do watch because it's fucking insane.
It's crazy. Yeah.
It's insane.
It really is.
But when you watch the stuff they say, it's... Nothing's based on facts. It's just entertainment. And the thing is, if you have a person who is older and who all they know, or not even older, and all they know is that, hey, I used to be able to do this thing. I used to be able to, like, build cars. I used to be able to mine.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
All they know is that it is gone now, and this TV show is telling them that people who don't look like them are the cause of it.
Yeah.
Not that, hey, you know what? Yeah, we shouldn't just go for oil. We should get you tech jobs now, which is easy to do.
Yeah.
But... You know.
Yeah, I don't know. It is really. It's. I think you're right that
we're
like
a wild ride right now.
I know. Really. It's this. Is...
I mean, because we're at a point right now in the world where history books will say who how this panned out. Like, you know, whatever happens in the next couple of years will affect. I mean, we can never go back in politics now.
No.
We have reality TV stars as our president. Mm-hmm. Like, we will never, ever go back to quorum ever again.
It doesn't feel like it's ever going to be... It's just going to get crazier and crazier.
We're in the weirdest timeline.
If Biden can even remotely get there, then all of a sudden we have, like, old, weird, confused guy in office. Like, okay, also, not as racist, but still very confused.
No, I mean, also, the stuff he's dealing with, like, Anita...
Anita.
I mean...
Yeah.
I didn't even know Biden was in contention until Super Tuesday, and all of a sudden he won... Yeah. Almost every state. I was like, when did this happen?
That's the crazy thing. Like, you have so many people that are front runners, and all of a sudden, like, with a single, like, a couple hours.
It was a day!
He's a front runner, and he can't even put a fucking sentence together.
He's still winning.
He's winning today, too, right?
No.
And I'm like, but it also, what it shows is that maybe it's not even race that is one of the biggest issues. I think maybe it's just money.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, our country became one of the richest nations, and it was built off of over 200 years of free labor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, legal, free labor.
And that's after, genocide and ethnic cleansing.
Yep. And it's like, you know, our country, like, I'm happy to live in America, but it's like our foundation was built kind of rough.
Yeah.
And why would we think those trends would change overnight? Like,
yeah.
No woman signed the Declaration of Independence.
That's a good
no
point.
No black person signed that thing. I'm not even sure they were in the goddamn room.
If they were on the block.
Exactly. Like, what the hell? Like, if a woman or a person of color was in that room, they were serving people in that
exactly.
room.
Exactly.
That's how that shit got signed.
Yeah.
They might have, like, oh, let me bring over the ink. Like, that's what happened. A woman handed the dude a pen.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice handwriting. But, like, why would we think that was supposed to protect us?
No.
Yeah.
It's not. The people that are the biggest protectors of it are usually not, they don't look like us.
I mean, we live in a world where people, like, I know I'm not trying to be political, but we live in a world where so many Nazi hunting movies.
I know.
Right? But I have never seen a Confederate hunting movie.
Of course not.
If you're one of these good old boys, as they call themselves, and you love America, the Confederates were anti-America. That was the point of having a different flag and trying to take over the North. The Confederates literally went to a civil war. I mean, of course it was for slavery, but they went to a civil war against America. So every time I see somebody with one of these flags and they're like, oh, you know, the good old days, I'm like, bro, you know,
that ain't America.
That's not America, though. Yeah. Like, the flag is not an American flag. Like, why do we educate people?
I think we have found, like, look, Nazis are evil. We'll just make people hunt. Like, they're okay to hunt, but not, like, what about, like, I don't know, Klan members? Like, why aren't they okay to hunt?
Because that's someone's cousin.
It's just upsetting.
Like that.
Because they're just trying to clean up the country, Shireen.
Exactly. There's a photo of a young white girl, and it's like a black man is hung behind her. She's pointing, smiling. That woman is still alive.
What?
That's somebody's grandma. The woman who lied on Emmett Till just died recently, and on her deathbed, admitted she lied.
That's a good point.
On her deathbed. And I'm like, these people are still here.
This entire time, your words affected so many people's lives.
I mean, again, like, you know, her lie, a lot of people consider spurred the civil rights movement, but like, she lied and then confessed it when she was dying.
Yeah.
It's like, and that's somebody's mom, that's somebody's grandma, that's somebody's great grandma. So like, what do you do when like that is in your family?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just scary.
I mean, like, as someone who, like, I've talked to so many filmmakers, like, to bring it back to film and like representation in that way, I think. And also just, like, white people being so adamant that they struggle, too. Like, the arguments that I get into that really make me mad are, like, when a white person assumes that when I'm trying to stand up for someone of color, I'm, like, dismissing their struggle.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, yes.
Or I'm choosing representation or diversity over quality. Like, that's what gets me a little bit upset is, like, we can't have it all. We have to choose diversity over like a good film in their opinion or something, you know what I mean? So it's like it's trying to convince them of changing this very stubborn part of their mind where it's like, I'm not trying to dismiss you, I'm not trying to do anything, like you know what I mean, like we all struggle, but I'm letting you know that you don't struggle as much as this person and we have to come together, you know what I mean?
Also, I'm at this point I don't even care about let's try, because to me it's like, as a black dude, I know my struggle isn't the same as a black woman. I know my struggle is not the same as a black trans person.
Yeah.
Like, my God. Like, we live in a world right now where black trans women are dying and people rarely talk about it. I mean, rarely talk about it. So it's hard because I know we live in a world, like you're saying, where, like, who has it worse? But now I'm like, I just don't care.
Yeah.
Like, if I want to support this thing, like, I'm working on a show right now and I was like, I want people of color on the crew. I don't care how hard it is.
Mm-hmm.
We'll figure it out. And to be truthfully honest, I'm like, you know what? I want everyone to be great, but I've hired a bunch of average-ass white dudes. I'm like, cool. fine. Like, I'd rather have this person and have them learn from this set than have to be like, oh, I hired this guy and be disappointed. I was like, yeah, I don't care.
That's a really good point.
Because I'm like, we've lived in a world where everyone's been given a leg up that mm-hmm. hasn't looked like us. And so I'm like, if I'm in the opportunity to do it, cool.
Yeah.
And I have no sympathy for it. Like, I don't give a shit if somebody complains. I'm like, cool. Yeah. I've sat there, I've had to have people put their nieces and nephews. I've had yeah. to hire them. I'm like, man, this person sucks.
Those must hires that yeah, are just like actual that. Like
I gotta hire
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
And you come in here all confident.
It's like, so infuriating.
I was like, what did you do? I mean, yeah. I will say this. I don't know if you guys read the Little Dicky article.
Oh God. The Vulture one. Read it, yeah.
No, I didn't like, see it. What did he say?
He basically talks about how he got his FXX show.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
he wanted a TV show.
And he in the article, he says, I have no idea what I'm doing. I've never done this. I don't know why they gave this. Like, it's just like he's stating that, like, he has no experience whatsoever. And it's very clear that he just because he's, like, a white dude, he was given this opportunity.
Got a whole show.
Is he self-aware?
I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell if it was, like.
I don't think so, because I truly think that, like, in his mind, he's been rapping for a while. He's been viral for a minute. You know what I mean? In his mind, like, oh, this is the next thing that I'm supposed to do. Like, I'm going to have a TV show.
Listen, I'm telling
his
everyone.
Show did come out of nowhere. I was like, why does he have a show?
Why does he have a show?
Yeah. And also, it's kind of the same vein of, like,
that
naming your show. No. Naming
it's about him being a rapper.
No. It's
right,
about,
but he's
it's like
his
naming
whole thing
your show.
Is he's a poor rapper.
It is the whole thing mm-hmm. of, like, naming your show after your name. Like, Rami.
His name's Dave?
His name is just, yeah, the show
Dave.
Is just
his
called
name
Dave.
Was Dickie.
The show is just
well,
called
that's the
Dave.
Thing. His rapper name is Lil Dicky.
But, like, really, all you have to have a show now is just, like, kind of be famous and, like, I don't know, be light-skinned, and then you have your own show. I don't know.
I just when I see his show, when I saw the ad for it, I didn't understand why. I was like, okay, so, like, are you a comedian now? Like, I don't know what you do. What you make funny raps.
What's your goal?
Yeah, mm-hmm. but, like, what is this show supposed to, like, what area are you filling with this show? And to me, I was like, nothing. So I haven't even started watching it. But, like, it's
have you ever
so...
noticed? That every time they say you can't make a show or movie about Hollywood, that when they do, it's usually a white guy that's the lead of it.
Uh-huh, yeah, of course. Uh-huh. But I don't understand, 100%. Like...
Every time.
I just don't know what angle he's coming from, but I guess they just gave it to him.
No, but in the article, he says that exact thing. He's just like, this fell in my lap. I have no experience. Why am I here?
They're
I'm
like,
going to go with
Dickie,
it.
Dickie, Dave, whatever your name yeah. is. I love what you're doing. You're so funny. Literally. You are so hilarious. You don't want to spend any money.
But that is his
what
whole thing.
What if we
that's
gave you a TV show?
That's the whole thing.
So people were saying on amazing. Twitter, like, they were sharing this article, like, quoting his inexperience and then being like, people of color, women are out here selling themselves like crazy, trying to fight to work on their own things. Like, there are so many women that are able to, or even people of color that sell their things, then have to fight to even be in the same room to even direct it or create it or stay as an EP. And then you have this dude that just like, just because he's a little bit like viral and like, I don't know, popular with the youth.
From now on, my 2020 goal is to have confidence of a white dude.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I tell you this. I'm gonna just walk around like I earned it already.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, technically, if you've done years of work anyway, so you know what? You technically did.
Yeah.
And so, why? I think because I think women, maybe more so than men of color, but like for sure, there's something in us that feels like we have to appease and have to prove ourselves and feel
always.
Like, oh, no. Okay, I can do it. And like, you're always trying to like.
You can't say no.
You can't say no. Yeah. You gotta do everything. Where now I'm like, fuck it, man.
And then you don't sleep and you're losing your hair like me.
Oh, I'm just like, listen, I'm picking my hair follicles out now. But it's like, why do we do that? And I'm like, let's just stop.
Yeah.
Like, what would happen if a lot of like creatives of color and women just were like, I'm gonna just be confident like a white dude. Will we get more shows?
Yeah, I think
like,
so.
Like, will we get more shows? We just walked in and be like,
having confidence of like a mediocre average white dude would do so much for
everyone's heads would explode.
Yeah.
I say we do it. Listen, try it. Your next pitch meeting, when you're turning in your test or you're giving that speech at work, just be confident as hell.
Yeah. Just imagine you're just like Dave.
Yeah, just be Dave. Be Dave,
just be
a.k.a.
Like, I don't know why
Dickie.
I'm here, but you are crazy not to listen to me.
Yeah. You're welcome for being in my presence.
Exactly. Okay, this has been a enlightening, riveting episode. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you. I feel like I got serious at one point. I don't know how we took
fine.
The turn
that's
to
our show's
we,
to
we
race
go with
out.
The flow. We go with the flow,
that's
you
what
know?
We talk about.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But where can the listeners find you?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jerah Milligan.
And that's
J-E-R-A-H-M-I-L-L-I-G-A-N. You can find Astronomy Club, the sketch show on Netflix, Black Men Can't Jump podcast, We release episodes every Tuesday. You can find out wherever episodes are. And if you're in LA, Black Men Can't Jump, we have a live show.
Woo!
Sunday, March 29th at 9 p.m. at UCB LA.
Woo!
UCB Sunset. So come through, show love.
Yeah, fine. Hopefully this comes out. Maybe this can come out the week before. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Whatever. Let me know. We'll I just had to throw it out because apparently they get mad at me because I'm terrible at plugging anything.
Well, I'm sure you'll have another comedy show.
Many shows.
Just follow Gerard on all the socials. Oh, yeah,
I mean, also follow, like, we'll go watch Astronomy.
Oh, please, yeah. Please watch it. The views, you know, tweet at Netflix, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Be like, yo, what's up with that season two? What's up with that season two?
Especially, honestly, especially with the craziness of the world right now, I feel like I'm living in the darkest timeline, the weirdest timeline. You need some laughter. And that's what I really found comforting about Astronomy Club. I was just like, I needed to fucking forget, you know? And it helped me forget a little bit. And it's just genuinely really fucking funny, and I'm not just saying that.
Oh, thank you.
So, yeah, this is Ethnically Ambiguous. I am Shireen. Ethnically Ambiguous is on Twitter, Ethnically Amb, A-M-B, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. And I'm Shireen Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
I'm just at Anna Hosey on Twitter.
And until next time,
stay tuned.
Stay Dave.
Stay. Stay as confident as Dave.
Okay. Stay. Yeah. Okay, bye.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.